Everybody loves a game show. Who doesn't like the chance to win valuable prizes? Who doesn't want to see two people competing over trivia, physical strength, or acts of human degradation, like, you know, eating a bowl of insects or something, for prize money? I went to this great quiz show in Indianapolis, Indiana. I think it's a one-of-a-kind experience. It's called the Ain't Too Late Show. It's hosted by our friend Jim Poizner, and what he does is he tests people's knowledge of climate change, contemporary issues in climate change. So these can range from funny questions about what's happening in the news to more depressing topics like what's happening to the fish in the ocean. And throughout the whole thing, it's fun, it's cavalier, but it's also serious and it imparts real knowledge. And I love the way Jim and people like Jim make the effort to try to invoke change in a fun and lighthearted way. Jim's a great speaker, a comedian. He works well with other people, and there's a whole host of contestants, announcers, guest stars, all of whom make it a really special night where actually you have a great time, you win some prizes, and you learn something. I got $25 worth of free dry cleaning. It was pretty awesome. So I'm grateful for Jim for that. And I was grateful to sit down and talk to him after the show. So this is us just after the Ain't Too Late show is finished up, talking about hope and change.
Hello, everybody.
It's the multicolored cultural laser. We travel the world for the boys and the girls. Casting pods of wonder and amazement. Multicolored cultural laser.
Hi, I'm Jim Poizner. I live in Indianapolis, Indiana. And I've begun to think of myself as an eco-tainer. I have been trying to blend my interest in climate change education with my background in theater and music. And tonight, we had the third installment of our brand new, world's first, climate change game show called The Ain't Too Late Show.
Yeah, it's great. And yeah, it was a really enjoyable show. Thank you so much for having us visit. And I even won a little bit of a prize. It was great. Because I think when we came in, people were asking, what's
the single most sustainable thing you can do? And your answer was to go into the woods, die, and be eaten by worms. And everybody loved that.
I think my original answer was just die.
Yeah. Well, you know, the climate challenge is so profound. It always strikes me as kind of weird that more people who get it aren't setting themselves on fire, because self-immolation has sparked so many huge mass movements in the past. But then I realized an environmentalist is not going to engage in airborne particulates.
So is this for you, for like putting on this show and doing things like ecotainment and doing stuff like, you have a piece where you look at bumper stickers that are hilarious, and you have a website, apocadops.com, where, you know, it's just a litany of relatively bad news with a little hilarious pithy comment associated with it. And there's this thing, and I think this is the thing that always gets me about this kind of activism, which is, God, it's such an uphill battle, and geez, it's such a struggle. So is doing this show a part of like helping you kind of find hope or not? It seems like it is.
Well, all these activities I do have a twofold purpose. One is to provide a platform for paying attention. I have said many times that we could solve our planetary problems if everybody was able to create their own website and have everyone pay enough attention to it so that they can make some revenue off it. Wouldn't that be awesome? Everybody on the planet with their own website that gets paid attention to enough to create a revenue stream. So that'd be one. That's one thing, is get engaged in some kind of platform that keeps you paying attention. The second thing is, for me, it's got to be fun, or it's going to lose me, and it's going to lose everybody else. So I try to think of forms of communication that are more pleasant and entertaining, so the message is delivered in a more palatable or safer format. Some of my friends just don't like that. They do not like Apocadox. They don't think this is funny, what's happening to the planet. And I don't either. But it's just my natural way to reduce anxiety is to laugh at something. So I do it for those reasons. Now, I'll add a third reason, which it is now my job. I am fully employed as a climate change educator in the schools of Indiana. I go to schools in Indiana and I deliver a climate change reality slideshow that I learned from Al Gore and a bunch of people, the Climate Reality Project. And I go around to schools and I either reinforce what they're already learning about science, about climate change, about how humans are creating climate change. And then I give them something to do. I give them a bunch of stuff to do, right? So much of what we are told we should do about climate change is personal behavior based. But so much that's causing our problems is way upstream in the hands of massive corporations. And in fact, it's interesting to look back and look at the 70s and the 80s here in America and saw where the message of the impact, the negative impact of consumerism on the environment was actually shaped into being a user problem, an end user responsibility. Instead of the end users going, wait a minute, why are there plastic straws? Why is there styrofoam? Right? Instead of consumers asking why this even exists, here in America where you're free to do anything, it never becomes anybody's fault but the individual. So I like to think that it's really important that kids understand what's happening to the planet and that they understand that they have power now to create change. And it's even important that they do it early on, because by the time they're in college and after college, they're just part of the consumer machine because they're paying back untold college debts and they're, you know, burdened by their car or mortgage or whatever. And it's good to get to kids early because they're still connected to nature and they still believe that they can do something.
Yeah, and when you're older, you've gotten a job and you have to drive to work, or you've ended up settling in a place where you can't imagine not having a vehicle to get around. The idea of a bicycle isn't there. I'm wondering, because this reminds me of a conversation I had recently with a friend who reminded me of this thing. I guess that happened in the 80s, which I remember. I guess it was 86, chlorofluorocarbons you're talking about a little bit tonight. And when people found out that there was a hole in the ozone layer, we went way more nuts than we're going now. And we banned chlorofluorocarbons astonishingly quickly comparatively to what we're doing for global warming. And, you know, people here and in the UK brought refrigerators in to get serviced and get the chlorofluorocarbons. You know, like, why did that happen so fast? And why is this other catastrophe that we're facing, why are we dealing with it so poorly and so slowly? And it very much is down to the industry, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't know if that's something, and we're not, and I say we, I mean, I think you're doing a lot more than I am, but, you know, as people who care about the subject, we're not doing enough to highlight the catastrophic elements of it, or there's not a big, you know, the hole in the ozone is an amazingly brilliant, like, terrifying thing where we don't have that nice little catchphrase, you know?
Well, I think it'd make a great documentary. A couple things occur to me. One is it was just one thing, CFCs. Climate change is, the list is long, you know, nitrous oxide, methane, you know, what emits more methane, Ryan, burping or farting?
I'm going to go with farting.
It's actually burping. So think about 65 billion confined animals on the planet burping and farting.
Disgusting.
That's a lot of methane. That's a whole lot of methane. So there's so many complicated aspects to climate change. And the CFCs was just one laser-focused problem to solve. I think also, and this is just commonsensical, this is why it'd make a great documentary. I think the people that were making the CFCs saw a perfect opportunity to make a bunch of money transitioning to something else. Because right now what we're doing is, like, the coal industry is like, no, we can't change. And the tar sands industry is like, drill, baby, drill, and frack, baby, frack, and all this kind of stuff. And meanwhile, the sun is pumping enough energy to light the planet up, you know, for free. And wind, I mean, I'm being naive here, but wind is blowing for free. You can't own these sources, right? So it's a profit motive in owning the resources. In fact, the amount of value placed on these fossil fuels is already on the ledger sheet of these companies, right? They have to get at it. Either that or we're going to have to pay them more than it's worth now to keep from doing it. So
yeah, that was the most depressing thing I think I read about climate change, which was the idea that, companies have leveraged the hypothetical resources they have in the ground and kind of mortgaged against it or whatever that's called to then increase their profits. They don't have that stuff. They haven't drilled for it yet. They haven't gotten it yet. But it's there as a profit, part of their income, right? Yeah. That's essentially what the situation
is. So you might say there's no turning back from that. You know, how do you turn back from that without, you know, absolute revisioning and repurposing of the way in which we do business? So anyway, CFCs, there was probably some great profit motives. In this case, unless the oil and coal companies are going to start investing heavily in renewable energy, which I believe would have great payoff. And I also think there's way more jobs in renewable energy than there is in coal and oil jobs. We could make that transition, but it would really require the will of the shareholders, mostly, and the business owners, to make a commitment to stop wrecking the planet.
That's where that's the nut of the problem, because I think people, and I think we saw it here tonight, and you see it kind of anytime you talk about these issues with aware people, sensitive people, everybody knows it's a problem. But, well, I could recycle more, but that's not the issue. We're all willing to wash out our tin cans, right? Like, everybody does it. You know, we don't even think twice about it. We all bring bottles to the recycling center. You know, everybody loves, like, my grandfather was proud to do it. You know, people think they're helping. But, like, the issue is so much bigger than that. And I think this is the important thing where humor comes in. And do you feel hopeful at the end of a show? Do you feel hopeful about the future? Do you find that people have conversations with you that you're like, oh man, I've switched somebody on? And I guess maybe that's part one of the question. Part two would be, how did you get like fully switched on to this issue? Because I think that's always an interesting story, you know, like what caused that little switch to flick in your brain that said, man, I could actually do something here and I have to do something here.
What switched it on in my brain was the circumnavigable North Pole in, I believe, 2007, 30 years ahead of prediction. I had been paying a modicum of attention to climate change, but only in my little world here in Indiana and what global news might reach me over the transom. I probably was pretty normal, alert to what's going on in the world, thinking there are a lot of problems out there. Climate change is one of them. Started to talk with my best friend from college, Michael Jensen, who lives in Nova Scotia. And we got together and said, you know, if we cook up something fun to do together, we'll see each other more often because we'll have more reasons to get together because Nova Scotia is far away from Indianapolis, Indiana. We had a bunch of ideas on a sheet of paper. This is like 2006, maybe. And one of them was, let's create a post-apocalypse survival aptitude test that will assess how likely you are to be eaten in the post-apocalypse. Because we knew the apocalypse was coming 2112, right? And said, let's do that. So we thought we were very clever. And in fact, Ryan, I'd love to share with you what ended up being four interlocking websites in a metafictional performance art piece about this performance art survival aptitude test. But that'll have to wait for another show.
You made it, though.
Oh, we made it. And it exists. And it's so weird and so complicated. Of course, no one ever looked at it. So we said, what do we do to make people look at this? I know, let's put a daily news feed on it. So we stuck a daily news feed almost arbitrarily onto one of these four sites, hoping to captivate attention, contemporary news. And then people would see the website and take the test and then see that there are three other sites and take those tests. And oh my God, who are these brilliant, clever men who've created this? But instead of that happening, we started paying attention to news stories from around the world and research from around the world. And it dawned on us within just a couple of weeks of this daily news feed that we were creating that we were absolutely in the beginning of what I call the great unraveling of our ecosystem. So right in there, as that was happening, came the news that the North Pole was circumnavigable for the first time in recorded human history, 30 years ahead of prediction by the IPCC that the North Pole would melt. Now predictions are it will be completely melted during the summer within years, maybe a decade or two. But something hit me so hard about that. It wasn't something in my neighborhood. It wasn't something out my back door. It was the North Pole, a place so far away I've never been and never will go to. But it was the epiphany that led me to realize that this was serious, serious business.
It's like being told in 10 years the sun won't exist. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, well, that's really bad.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to have that effect on people.
Well, you know, you can get into the numbers, or you can just simply say that fossil fuel emissions raise the temperature of the atmosphere. The atmosphere holds more moisture when it's warmer. The Arctic is melting, and once it starts melting, the albedo effect ensures a positive feedback loop that further melts the Arctic. These are fourth grade science instructions, Ryan.
Kids get it?
Kids get it. I know kids who get it. I was in a school today full of fourth and fifth graders who get it. This is simple science. You get real complicated and talk about uncertainty, and then things get really confusing. What we're doing to the physics of the atmosphere is super simple, very clear. And yes, I lost hope. And one of the reasons I lost hope was because I had learned over a lifetime that the evil twin of hope is despair. And instead of being on that roller coaster all the time, I decided to get off the hope and despair wheel and just get the work done. And the work for me is finding ways to talk about this so it's safer for people to learn. Because here in the middle of Indiana, it's tough. Now, that new poll from Stanford says that a majority of Hoosiers, in fact, a majority of Americans, it's a very hopeful poll result to look at now. The majority of Americans get it. And they actually want the government to do something about it, too. So the new numbers are actually encouraging, even though in the Midwest, for example, we've had nothing like the drought we had a year ago. A year ago, a lot of people were thinking about climate change and global warming because it was so much in their face. So I spend my time thinking of great ways to think and talk and share and create community about this most massive of issues. I think of ways to build community and bridges with the people that I otherwise might think are enemies or stupid or evil. And I don't know what good that does, because when we're talking about our children and our grandkids, these are transcendent values. And I believe we're at a time where we can begin to access that, because the kids are being taught in school all over the country and all over the world what's happening to the world. These kids get it. And now my job, and I believe our job, is to support these kids so that they don't lose hope, so that they can take control of their communities, create resilient practices, adopt renewable energy, vermicompost, build green roofs, have chickens, grow a garden. I mean, the list is, 10 things. It doesn't have to be that many, right? Kids are already doing it in their schools, and then they're bringing it home. The revolution is happening. We just have too many people still living in the coal age.
Right, and it's a hard thing to give up, right? Some people are talking about a fundamental change in lifestyle. And that is going to have to happen. But at the same time, and then this will get thrown at you a lot, I'm sure. Hypocrisy. I personally am a big fan of hypocrisy. Like, I think it's okay that you're a vegetarian, but you wear shoes. How do you deal with that conversation when somebody's like, well, we aren't going to believe in climate change, and we're not going to change any of our behavior because you drive a car or because you fly to Miami occasionally? Like, how do you deal with that issue? What's your response to that?
Well, that's a tough one. I actually don't get called on that all that often. I usually ride my bicycle to everywhere I go. I rode my bicycle to the show tonight. Now, that's not the only eco action. Yeah.
But you use lights, right? You have a house, you know, you like watch TV, you have an internet.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, when it comes to bona fides or bona fides or whatever, it's like if you ride a bike all the time, you've already kind of one-upped somebody before they're talking to you, right?
That's it in America these days. Like if you ride a bike, because I ride a bike everywhere, I'm done, but I fly normal, like a jerk. Right?
Yeah, you're like normal where you come from. So, no, I'm real fond of telling people, look, nobody's perfect. And if we're here to become perfect, then we're here to fail. Just get better. Just get more conscious. You know, the other ideas that people had for sustainability, yours was the most fun, and I loved it the most, and it won. But the others were kind of cool. One was pay attention. I thought that was profound. The single best thing you can do is pay attention. And then another one, somebody said, only use what you need. And that's pretty cool too. So, you know, I'm going into schools, I'm talking to kids who already get it, and there's not a lot of pushback from them or their teachers. So I'm kind of in a safe place that way. I'm sure I'll get on somebody's radar, you know, and talk about the meat I had the other day or the coal that I burned my lights with when I got home and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Where do you get your fruit from?
Well, I am.
You can answer.
When I do drive, I always say mea carpa.
But that's what I like about it. And I made this decision myself recently. Was like, I'm not going to put something on Facebook about an event that was happening regarding climate change. And I was like, I'm going to promote this. I believe in it. I'm going to promote it. And the skeptic kind of came in and was like, where do those numbers come from? And I said, look, I was going to avoid it. You know, usually in Facebook, I don't get into these political conversations. I don't like it. I don't have 15 hours to spend going back and forth because there's loads, you know, somebody else has loads more time. So I said, look, I'm not a scientist, but I believe in society has created institutions and these things. And I think that's really important what you're doing, which is encouraging people to have that discussion and to stand up for, well, I don't even want to say what they believe in because I don't think it's a belief issue. I think it's fact these days, right?
Well, it's as fact as you can get with a scientist, right? Yeah. I mean, we're basically at the level of gravity at this point. Do you believe in gravity or do you just experience it, right? 97% of climatologists, people whose job it is to understand this, believe that there's a 95% chance that the warming that we're experiencing in the atmosphere and in the oceans and other evidence, chemical footprints of carbon emissions and its impact on the Earth, is coming from humans and is radically altering the physics. I don't know how you not call that a fact. Now, if a scientist was sitting here, he would like, well, that's not quite a fact. We have to get to 100%. Whatever. Talk to the people in the Philippines, right? I'm not somebody that's going to tell you that typhoon was caused by climate change. Was it made worse because warmer atmosphere creates more moisture and warmer water creates a more tempestuous weather system? The storm surges we saw at Sandy and this terrible typhoon? Yes, I will be that guy. I won't tell you it was caused by climate change. It was going to happen anyway. But was it made worse? I think it was made worse. And I think a lot of climatologists would tell you that too. But you know, they're so careful. They're so careful because when they do screw up, then the skeptics and the deniers just grab it and run. But you know, there just aren't that many deniers. They're just loud, right? There's only a handful of percentage of people that think global warming is a hoax. And they're the same people that think we didn't go to the moon. Right? We don't really have to include them in the conversation. They don't have to be part of the speak space. Neither the people that are, you know, skeptical or whatever. It's like, we need those people. We need those people that are always thinking and they reject authority. Chris Mooney wrote a book called The Republican Brain, released a couple of years ago. And it's a bad name for a book, just simply because it looks like this polarizing kind of thing. It's actually a pretty neutral look at how brains work differently if you're a progressive versus a regressive. I mean, a Republican. and you know, the book is actually a plea to the sides to get together, to appreciate each other. you have to acknowledge there's an enormous problem first. And once we acknowledge there is a problem, then we have to find the cause. And once we can figure that out, then we're going to need each other. We're still not recognizing what the cause is. There's still reasonable, intelligent people who think that this is natural, what's happening to the planet, who think that we're not enough to change the physics of an enormous globe, right? They're wrong. They're simply wrong. But if they could get to the point where they acknowledge the scientific truth of this, then the stuff we argue about after that is really useful. You know, I have an inner Republican who pops out all the time, you know. And in fact, I would say engaging in conversations and listening to people by being a presenter and going to schools and going to retirement homes and churches has opened me up. I'm less reflexive environmentalist or a progressive as I used to be because I'm listening to people. And I, for example, used to think technology couldn't save us. But when a kid in Bloomington, Indiana, tells me that we should continue to pursue nuclear technology because it might help us find the key to unlock the technology behind cold fusion, and I find out that that kid has a particle accelerator in his basement. He does. His dad's a physicist at the university. It's like, I'm not going to tell a kid no. You know, kids in schools, they think nuclear might save us. And I always say, here's stuff that doesn't work about nuclear, and here's stuff that does work about it, and here's more to read. Now, you tell me more about what you think about nuclear once you've digested this stuff, because I don't believe that technology will save us, but I'm not in the business of shutting down these young minds either. I want to encourage them to think of their solutions. When you ask me about hope, Ryan, it's now my job to educate kids about climate change and to offer them opportunities to address it on a personal and on a policy level. I can't be hopeless in that. I can't communicate an overall negative message. I have to walk that tightrope between telling them the truth about what's going on, what their future looks like, with empowering them to do something about it.
Jim Poyser, everybody. If you want to go and get yourself empowered, get a little bit of knowledge in a really fun way, show up at the Ain't Too Late show in Indianapolis. It's the third Tuesday of every month from 6:30 p.m. Win valuable prizes. It's really a lot of fun. Thanks to him for putting it together. And thanks also to our friend Karen Irwin, who helped us out with setting us up with a load of great people to meet there in Indianapolis and was a fantastic MC of the evening as well. We're going to leave you with a track from the Canyon Collected. Now, this band has a really interesting story. I was reading about it. They kind of met together at Yellowstone National Park there in America, where every summer for the last 140 summers, people have gathered and just shared music and art and words. And kind of throughout August and throughout the summertime, just anybody who's around will pick up a banjo or a fiddle or a mouth harp and some spoons and just play music together. And so that's kind of how the Canyon Collected started. But of course, when it became wintertime, everybody leaves. And these guys tried to keep the legacy of that and the spirit of that collective musical enterprise together via the Canyon Collected. They're a great band. You can check out their record on Bandcamp. It's called On the Road. They also have a Facebook page, which you can like. So everybody, this is the Canyon Collected with the Green Mountain Blues.
Timber crushing mills, man, I've been gone for too many days. I've lost the old touch of the country way. Shotgun pumped and ready to shoot, but I just gotta lace up timber walls. Mustache curled in the wind through my hair, pedal to the metal going nowhere. Take off your shoes, and that's when you know you got them Green Mountain Blues. Mustache curled in the wind through my hair, pedal to the metal going nowhere. Take off your shoes, and that's when you know you've got them Green Mountain Blues, yeah! Yeah!
tell you what we're bringing. Case full of being bed full of buddies. Chances are you're gonna know everybody. See all the girls and try to act cool. Chances are you're gonna be the drunk and fool. Mustache curled in the wind through my hair. Pedal to the metal, going nowhere. Take off your shoes, and that's when you know you've got them green mountain blues. Mustache curled in the wind through my hair. Pedal to the metal, going nowhere. Take off your shoes, and that's when you know you've got them green mountain blues. Yeah. Your shoes, and that's when